According to Deutsche Welle, which did extensive reporting on the recent UN climate summit in Bonn, Germany, the official U.S. delegation to the conference was minimal and, quote, clung to coal. But the unofficial U.S. delegation came through with a resounding, we're still in. New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli was a member of that unofficial U.S. delegation and joins us now to discuss the conference as well as the state's looming budget gap. Great to see you.
Susan, good to see you.
So the primary goal of the Paris Climate Accord is limiting the Earth's temperature rise to 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit or 2 degrees Celsius. And you spoke on a panel on how investors like you, you're in charge of New York's pension funds, you're an investor, on how they're working to deliver on that agreement. So yeah. What did you tell people and what did you hear?
Yeah. Well, first of all, it was exciting to be there. I had been at the Paris talks that resulted in that historic agreement and was very proud to be invited back to COP23, as it was called.
That's what the cool kids call it, COP23.
It was interesting because, you know, actually the sponsor of this conference was Fiji, the Fiji Islands. Although it was held in Bonn, because it's a lot easier to get to Bonn, Germany than get to the Fiji Islands.
Right.
But, you know, the overall point, I think, especially with Fiji being the sponsor, is that, you know, we talk about climate risk, climate change, greenhouse gas emissions with concern and often in a very theoretical way. An island nation, it's not theoretical.
No,
they're already
happening.
Seeing rising sea levels, and they will be the first to be devastated. So anytime you're at a gathering of world leaders, very different than, you know, being in New York State, much as I love, you know, traveling around the state, you get a very different perspective. And keep in mind now, 2 years after Paris, there were two nations that were holdouts, Nicaragua and Syria. They are now both on board, even with all of whatever is going on in Syria. They came on board, and now the U.S. is now going to be the only nation talking about pulling out of Paris. So there was a big interest to talk to representatives of the U.S. beyond the official delegation. Governor Jerry Brown was there the day that I was there. Governor McCullough from Virginia was there. There are a few other officials from the states.
Well, the states are picking up the slack.
The states and localities, absolutely. And as you point out, my invitation emanated from the fact that as a trustee for the state pension fund, investors have an important role to play. So actually, there were two panels that I participated in because once they heard I was there on one panel, so we got to do the other panel, too.
You were roped into doing two. All right.
Well, you know, since you go that far, you'll do it. So it was an opportunity for me to, first of all, make clear that we are still in it and that we view climate risk and climate change as a material risk to our portfolio, and that as part of wanting to be a sustainable pension fund over the very long term, which is what a pension fund is, it's basically a perpetual investor, we are incorporating consideration of climate into our investment decisions. So it gave me a chance to talk about some of the investments we've made that have been consistent with the transition to a lower carbon economy, to talk about some of our corporate engagements when we, you know, the Exxon vote of last year, which was
an example of activist investing.
Yeah. Yeah. So we for the second year, we put in a shareholder resolution calling on ExxonMobil to develop an analysis of what will be the impact of the changed regulatory environment with the Paris Agreement and how are they incorporating climate change into their risk assessment of their business plan. The first year we put that resolution forward, we only got about 32%, which was a good first-time vote, but it failed. Last year, and we co-filed it with the Church of England, that helps, right? A little bit of God on your side. It passed with 62%, and some of the big, big institutional players like BlackRock, Vanguard, they actually voted their shares, you know, they have all those mutual funds, in favor of the resolution. So it really was a groundbreaking moment, and you know, we're still waiting to see how ExxonMobil is going to adhere to what, you know, the resolution called for.
What if they don't? I mean,
well, you know, that's a good question, and we're looking at that. It may mean we have to do another resolution. I hope we don't. I mean, we have been engaged in conversation with the company, but let's just say that's still a work in progress. So it really was a combination of having the opportunity to talk about our investments. I talked about our low emission index that, you know, we put in over $2 billion initially, and that's grown and worked out well, where we incentivize investments to companies that are willing to disclose their carbon footprint and have a plan to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions. And we're you know, considering scaling that up even further, and talk about the engagements as a shareholder. And there was a great deal of interest, and because the U.S. really was so poorly represented there, there really was a lot of attention paid to those of us who were still, in concert with the international
engaged.
Community. And engaged and in concert with the goals of Paris.
Yeah. So what ideas did you bring back with you, if any? I mean, I saw that the BlackRock was represented on one of your
yes,
panels.
Yeah. And it was great because, as I said, they ended up supporting us on the Exxon deal. Well, first of all, I came back reaffirmed in my thinking that we're on the right track and we want to stay in this direction. Also, I was very pleased to hear from some of our European counterparts that they are seeing opportunities in the renewables in terms of solar, wind, clean energy opportunities. Because sometimes here in the U.S., we're finding it a little more difficult than I'd like to think we would find it to find investment opportunities. One of our challenges is we're big. You know, as you know from our recent announcement, we're now over $200 billion in assets in the pension fund. So when we do an investment, it's very hard to do smaller one-off investments, and we typically like to take a big chunk of money. I'm now talking about if we're doing something, let's say, in private equity or real estate or real assets, where you might find some of these kinds of investments. We'd like something of a scale that we can put a fair amount of money, a big chunk of money, and those are hard to come by. So I heard of some opportunities. I mentioned to staff some suggestions on who they could follow and
like
track down.
When you say some opportunities, like wind power, solar power, hydropower, anything like that.
Yeah, and it could be that it's global. It could be that, I mean, we'd love to do more in the U.S., and we'll look for those opportunities. But certainly in Europe, where you have many countries that have made very aggressive commitments as far as transition to the low-carbon economy, or in the developing world, where they're just building their infrastructure. And then obviously a lot of our portfolio is still in public equities. And that's where there was a great deal of interest in that low emission index that we've really spearheaded. Others now have done some similar things. And again, we need to make money for the pension fund. I always have to keep in mind, and my staff always reminds me, that's my fiduciary
primary obligation
to our members, our retirees, future retirees, and of course taxpayers as well. But that index is performing well. We like indexes because you can put a big chunk of money in it and low fee, so it's very efficient. And I'm hoping that when we speak in January, that I'll be able to tell you that we're putting more money into that index. So whether it's on the public equity side or on the alternative side, we are looking for more opportunities to really be part of this transition to the lower carbon economy, which I think makes sense for all of us to have a sustainable future. And for our pension fund, these are smart long-term strategies for us to be engaged in.
Absolutely. You mentioned January and the pension fund. A lot of people are looking toward January and the beginning of the budget, the executive budget delivery, and the negotiation of the state budget. You have said the state actually faces three financial challenges. What are they when it comes to finances?
Well, the triple whammy, if you will, the triple threat, a lot of it emanates from what may or may not be happening in Washington. The continued issue of what's going to happen to the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. We've leveraged billions of dollars under the current structure. 2 billion New Yorkers could lose health care coverage. That'll all cost us more in the long run, and we will lose some of those federal dollars that have benefited our state and obviously our localities through the Medicaid program as well. Federal budget cuts that would threaten state and local programs, again, could be just in the coming year. Going back a couple of months, we assessed it at about $1.24 billion in cut.
And we have to remember, after tax reform, they have to somehow do the budget.
And that's the third one, is tax reform. What's happening with that? And we know there's a lot happening right now. And the real threat there is the loss of state and local tax deductibility, the so-called SALT issue. It's interesting, in New York, you're seeing a number of the Republican members of Congress are coming out very strongly against the direction. Now, I wish they would have more impact and influence, but that will really hurt us in many ways. So that's the triple threat. On top of it, as you know, Susan, we've been reporting that the tax collections have come in lower than anticipated.
Why is that?
Well, that's a good question.
Is that about tax reform?
It could be. You know, part of it may be some softening in the economy and the recovery. Part of it could also be that some higher income, higher earning New Yorkers are waiting to see what will be the final tax structure. So it's possible that, you know, you'll see an uptick. It's, you know, the other piece we reported on Wall Street that they're headed for a very good year, barring something remarkable between now and December 31st, which could mean an increase in the bonuses that'll be paid out after January 1st. That might be an uptick in our revenue picture. But even at the mid-year and with the estimates, projections being lowered consistently, we were still short, you know, largely because of personal income tax not coming in as strongly as expected. So you are talking about, you know, an out-year gap next year, you know, about $4.5 billion. You know, that doesn't include, you know, the governor's 2% goal as far as controlling spending. That would still leave, you know, something like $1.7 billion okay. to be dealt with. So, and then you accumulate that in coming years. You know, we are facing definitely a more challenging fiscal picture as we head into the next budget negotiation than we've had.
Real quickly, do you agree with the governor that, quote, by eliminating or rolling back the SALT deduction, Washington is sending a death blow to New York's middle class families and our economy?
Well, I certainly agree with him that it's a form of double taxation. And to the extent that we have many middle class families that are barely holding on all across the state. I mean, I live on Long Island, and the issue of taxes is always a big, big issue, very high property taxes. Look, we're a high tax state. You know, people demand much in services, and we try to fulfill that commitment. As long as we've had the income tax, we've always had this deductibility for state and local taxes. It is a real change in direction. I'm sure it's just a coincidence that New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, California, blue states are the ones that get hurt by this. It's a transfer of wealth, really, to red states, number one. And number two, the wealthiest are going to be the ones most to benefit. So it's not good for the middle class. The governor's absolutely right about that.
I wanted to ask you about a consumer protection issue around gift cards, because people, it's the holidays, but we're running out of time. But real quickly, the message here is read the fine print.
Read the fine print and register your gift card when you have the opportunity to do that, because if for some reason it gets lost or not used, it then comes into unclaimed funds, and we want to be able to return that money.
That's right. And if you want to look to see if you have any money that's owed to you, you can just go to your website.
Go to the website and put your name in, and happy holidays. Get some money back.
That's right. Controller Tom DiNapoli, what a pleasure. Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving, Susan.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.